di da 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 di da da di da da di da da.
And welcome to another stupefying episode of the Sunday Morning Hangover. I am your host, the Reverend Mark Time, with you as always as noon, with you till noon. That's what I meant to say. And today is a kind of a special show because, well, we have Haley Loren coming in at 10:30 to sing live. That's going to be a hoot, and I'm going to throw some tunes at her and see if she can handle them. Hope you're not listening, Haley. The other thing is, it's International Louie Day. A little bit later, we'll be talking about that, as well as it's the 20th anniversary of the airing of the TV series Twin Peaks. And so today, most of the show, besides the Haley Loren segment, will be spent with all things Twin Peaks. Interviews with David Lynch, excerpts from the Agent Cooper diaries, and the music and sounds of TV's most influential TV show. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, well, you can either tune in or tune out. But you Twin Peaks fans, you're going to love this. Here's a show that influenced The Medium, The Mentalist, X-Files, and many, many more TV shows, including The Sopranos. And today we're going to celebrate the 20th anniversary, the 20th birthday of David Lynch and Mark Frost's Twin Peaks, which aired in 1990.
Thank you. I love going into another world, and I love mysteries. So I don't really like to know very much ahead of time. I like the feeling of discovery. I think that's one of the great things about a continuing story, that you can go in and go deeper and deeper and deeper. You begin to feel the mystery, and things start coming. The popularity of continuing stories on TV goes in waves. Periodically, the networks do these polls, and they come up with different things. At one time, they had determined that people don't watch every single week. People may watch two times a month, and so the reasoning went, they lose their way in a continuing story and drop away from the show. Obviously, the networks don't want people to drop away, so for a certain period of time, they soured on a continuing story and wanted closed endings. I don't know quite how the network decided to let Twin Peaks become a pilot, but just because they let something become a pilot, it doesn't mean they're going to make it into a series. So it got that far, and even then they didn't really know what to do with it. They send these things to a place, I think it's in Philadelphia, and they have people watch the shows and grade them. Somehow it got a fairly good score, but not spectacular. I don't know what happened between that time and the time it aired, but it just got a huge, huge share that opening night. So that was a very lucky thing.
Finger under the nail. Let's see what he left us. It's an R. Diane, give this to Albert and his team. Don't go to Sam. Albert seems to have a little more on the ball. I need to bag and tag this. Okay, Cooper. If you're gonna let me in on whatever the hell is going on here. Sheriff, we got a lot to talk about. Diane, I just opened Laura Palmer's diary. This is the last entry dated February 23rd. It reads, asparagus for dinner again. I hate asparagus. Does this mean I'll never grow up? And then she's written, nervous about meeting Jay tonight. That's the letter J, Diane. Well, that's something to get started on.
Yeah, that's 1 out of 26.
Yeah, 1 out of 26. Diane, I've just turned back 18 days to day one. What we have taped to the page here is a plastic envelope containing a white residue and what looks to be a key to a safety deposit box. Sheriff, you have to very carefully remove this key. I'm gonna run this envelope. And my bet is, it'll test positive for cocaine.
This is impossible.
You ever been surprised before?
Mr. Cooper, you didn't know.
Let's get started on a court order to open that safety deposit box, and maybe we'll both find out a few things about Laura Palmer.
Thank you. Cheyenne, 9:30 p.m. Night has fallen hard in Twin Peaks. You're not going to believe this, but I'm actually looking at the Milky Way, which I can't recall seeing before in quite this extraordinary way. The night is painted with stars. I've just finished addressing the local citizenry on the need for caution and pulling together at a time like this. Have a list of people I'm going to want some background checks on, including a lady who carries a log. They call her the Log Lady.
One summer day, I was at a laboratory called Consolidated Film Industries in Los Angeles. We were editing the pilot for Twin Peaks and had finished for the day. It was around 6:30 in the evening and we'd gone outside. There were cars in the parking lot. I leaned my hands on the roof of one car and it was very, very warm. Not hot, but nicely warm. I was leaning there and, psst, the Red Room appeared. And the backward thing appeared, and then some of the dialogue. So I had this idea, these fragments, and I fell in love with them. That's how it starts. The idea tells you to build this red room. So you think about it. Wait a minute, you say. The walls are red, but they're not hard walls. Then you think some more. They're curtains. And they're not opaque. They're translucent. Then you put these curtains there, but the floor, it needs something. And you go back to the idea, and there was something on the floor. It was all there. So you do this thing on the floor, and you start to remember the idea more. You try some things, and you make mistakes, but you rearrange, add other stuff, and then it feels the way the idea felt. People have asked me why, if meditation is so great and gives you so much bliss, are my films so dark and there's so much violence? There are many, many dark things flowing around in this world now, and most films reflect the world in which we live. They're stories. Stories are always going to have conflict. They're going to have highs and lows and good and bad. I fall in love with certain ideas, and I am where I am. Now, if I told you I was enlightened, and this is enlightened filmmaking, that would be another story. But I'm just a guy from Missoula, Montana, doing my thing, going down the road like everybody else. We all reflect the world we live in. Even if you make a period film, it will reflect your times. You can see the way period films differ depending on when they were made. It's a sensibility, how they talk, certain themes, and those things change as the world changes. And so, even though I'm from Missoula, Montana, which is not the surrealistic capital of the world, you could be anywhere and see a kind of strangeness in how the world is these days, or have a certain way of looking at things.
This must be where pies go when they die. Diane, 11:30 p.m., Great Northern Hotel, room 315. Events converge. The theory of concentric thinking. There may, in fact, be no such thing as coincidence. While generally a man missing a limb is not in and of itself strange for a hospital, Deputy Hawk reports seeing a one-armed man outside of intensive care. A note. 5x7 envelope, cream-colored, and scented with an expensively priced perfume, was slipped underneath my door. It said, Jack with one eye. Now to sleep, perchance to dream.
Lucy? Lucy, this is Pete Martell. Lucy, put Harry on the horn.
Sheriff, it's Pete Martell up at the mill. I'm going to transfer to the phone on the table by the red chair. The red chair against the wall. The little table with the lamp on it. The lamp that we moved from the corner. The black phone, not the brown phone.
Morning, Pete. Harry.
She's dead. Wrapped in plastic.
Diane, 10:25 a.m., Twin Peaks County Morgue. Upon the completion of Laura's autopsy, Sheriff Truman and Albert Rosenfield entered into a heated discussion, at the end of which Sheriff Truman punched Albert in the nose. I can't say I didn't see it coming. Diane, let's face the music. Albert Rosenfield has not changed. Since arriving in Twin Peaks, his actions here have been, as usual, callous and insensitive. You'd better prepare the appropriate paperwork for action unbecoming a field officer, as I suspect Albert will attempt to file charges against Sheriff Truman, and I intend to defend Harry to the utmost of my ability. Diane, in 3 hours, Twin Peaks buries a young girl. I'm looking at her face. Death is seldom kind and never fair. I know that good is stronger than evil, and yet sometimes it's difficult to see it, even in a place like Twin Peaks.
I think she knows about us.
Norma? Hmm. No, fat chance. I think she's hot to trot for you herself.
Happy birthday, Twin Peaks. 20 years later, I've got Haley Loren at the door. We're going to hear from Haley in a few minutes. This is the Reverend Mark time. I was in the middle of a Twin Peaks thing. I don't know how much further I'm going to go with our tribute to the show Twin Peaks. There's kind of a weird song that occurred in the first series of Twin Peaks when James sits down with two of the girls and decides to sing a love song, and I just got to play it.
Together forever.
Okay, from the Twin Peaks soundtrack, You and I by James and the Girls. This is the Reverend Mark time, and we're doing one more thing about Twin Peaks. This particular piece was from NPR Radio. I want to give them kudos for doing this great piece. This is a little bit about the 20th anniversary of Twin Peaks from NPR.
Today's the 20th anniversary of the first broadcast of Twin Peaks, a groundbreaking TV series that combined murder, drama, and soap opera. Twin Peaks was created by David Lynch and Mark Frost. It still shows up on cable, and there's a definitive gold box set available on DVD. Our critic at large, John Powers, says even after two decades, his heart still skips a beat when he hears Angelo Badalamenti's familiar opening theme.
Back in the summer of 1989, I was invited to a sneak preview of a TV pilot. I didn't know anything about it, but the moment I heard its opening theme music, I got shivers that didn't go away. This was TV the way I dreamed it could be. Funny, menacing, mysterious. In fact, it was so weird and wonderful that as I walked from the theater, I remember saying, "Too bad no network will ever put it on the air." Goes to show what I know. What I'd seen, of course, was the pilot of Twin Peaks. And several months later, ABC did put it on the air, creating an instant sensation. It wasn't simply that the program was a hit, or that Time magazine put Lynch on its cover, dubbing him a genius. Here was a show that had everyone talking the next day about the startling things they'd seen the night before. You know, a spooky reflection of the long-haired killer Bob, or the time that the sexpot Audrey Horne tied a cherry stem into a knot with her tongue. By now, everyone knows the plot. In the small, lumbering town of Twin Peaks, a high school girl, Laura Palmer, is found wrapped in plastic. She's been murdered. Enter Special Agent Dale Cooper, wittily played by Kyle MacLachlan, a chipper FBI man obsessed with coffee, diner food, and Tibetan mysticism. Cooper soon discovers that far from being an amusingly offbeat outpost of innocent Americana, Twin Peaks is a bubbling cauldron of vice. Everybody has secrets, which are uncovered in a fashion that might be called leisurely. Here, Agent Cooper's having breakfast at a cafe when he's joined by the local sheriff, Harry S. Truman, played by Michael Ontkean, and his dim receptionist, Lucy. That's Kimmy Robertson. They think he's going to name the murderer.
Trudy, two more coffees, please. Harry, Lucy...
It is an absolutely beautiful morning. Short stack of griddle cakes, melted butter, maple syrup, lightly heated, slice of ham. Nothing beats the taste sensation when maple syrup collides with ham.
Griddle cake, slice of ham.
Who killed Laura Palmer?
Harry, let me tell you about the dream I had last night.
Tibet.
No. You were there. Lucy, so were you. Harry, my dream is a code waiting to be broken. Break the code, solve the crime.
The code, solve the crime.
If you ask Lynch what he cares about most, he'll tell you it's creating a mood you want to be in. Twin Peaks does that with a vengeance, from its dark slated photography to the enveloping score by Angelo Badalamenti. Keeping us off balance, the tone leapfrogs between the silly and the sinister, the comic and the tragic, never more so than in Ray Wise's dazzling performance as Laura's father, Leland Palmer, who's sobbing one moment, breaking into song and dance the next. Twin Peaks smuggled the avant-garde into prime time, brimming with a surrealism you just didn't encounter back then. Remember that weird room with the dwarf who talked backwards? It took cultural stereotypes, the straight-arrow FBI agent, the teen hottie, the wannabe James Dean, the corrupt small-town businessman, and pushed them until they exploded. The result was an often hilarious show, bursting with raw emotion. For all its brilliance, Twin Peaks did lose its way. The first season was astounding, as were the season two episodes that solved Laura Palmer's murder. But the others were pointless, and the world quickly turned against it and Lynch. When he brought out his Twin Peaks movie, Fire Walk With Me, in 1992, it was pilloried, even though after a lousy first 20 minutes, this story about Laura Palmer is one of the most wrenching portraits of teenage life ever filmed. But Lynch has always outlasted those eager to write him off. His 2001 movie, Mulholland Drive, recently won most critics' polls as the best film of the last decade, and Twin Peaks is today recognized as a landmark. His work always feels dreamily timeless, and watching the series now, you're struck by how much has come out of it. For instance, Stephanie Meyer's use of the Pacific Northwest in Twilight. Twin Peaks blazed a trail that led not just to The X-Files and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but to HBO series like Deadwood and 6 Feet Under. Yet the real importance of Twin Peaks lay not in its direct influence. There's still nothing quite like it on TV. It mattered, because like Dennis Potter's The Singing Detective in Britain, it revealed the untapped possibilities of television. And like all the greatest works of pop culture, it did something more. It broadened public taste. Laura Palmer, Agent Cooper, and the Log Lady didn't merely entertain us. They left the American mainstream a whole lot wider.
John Powers is film critic for Vogue, and his reviews and columns appear on Vogue.com.
All right, that concludes our 20-year birthday celebration for the show Twin Peaks. That was an NPR report, which is available on the net. This is the Reverend Mark Time, another half hour with you. And I'm really excited about a band that's going to be on my show next week. Let me tell you about the lineup of shows I've got going on. I've got next week a band from Australia will be phoning in. They're three sisters, well, we'll have two of them, that had a bunch of hits in Australia in the 1970s and 80s. No hits here. They were called the Moyer Sisters, and the Moyer Sisters were known for weird chord changes in their songs and very high harmonies. I'll be playing some of their stuff in a second. Also, we have coming in a few weeks, Elliot from Booze Week magazine will be doing a show about all things Booze Week and what's going on there, as well as Sassy, who's with the band Alpha Dahlia, but she's also in a new band. Sassy will be in. I'll be interviewing her. And Maxine Dunn, I'm setting up an interview with Liverpool. Maxine Dunn is a songwriter, singer-songwriter from Liverpool. Does a lot of great pop music. I might play something by her a little bit later in today's show, and we'll be doing a live phone-in interview with her because she's playing the Cavern in Liverpool. Let me think, who else am I forgetting? We've got a lot of variety going on here on the Sunday Morning Hangover here on KWVA. Now, the Moyer sisters, M-O-I-R, I've been playing this track a lot, but I can't get away from it because not only are the chord changes very complex, but this was written when the lead singer, Jean Moyer, was only 15 years old. And it's a song about her mom, and it's very, very sweet, extremely sweet. Anybody that's allergic to sugar might avoid this, but I really like what they did here in 1974, a track written for her mom. It's called Good Morning, How Are You? By the Moyer sisters, who will be here next week. Moyer sisters, who will be on phone from Australia. It'll be 6 a.m. on Monday morning their time, 11 a.m. next Sunday here on The Hangover. I've got one more by them. They put out one album based around that album in 75. And then in 1978, they were signed by Elton John's Rocket Records label. Margot, Jean, and Leslie, three sisters with a backup band here. Some really cool guys, and this track's a little bit, suffers a little bit from the creeping 80s production, but this track written by Jean Moyer really showcases their harmonies. It's from State of Shock. It's called Lately It Seems.
And it's not
tribute song to Sunday Morning Hangover, Tiny Bubbles by Billy Vaughn, a real cornball version of that. But we actually heard something kind of cool before that. Ween Zoloft, and I got turned on to that song by one of our KWVA DJs last week. You never know what you're going to hear here on KWVA. Big props to Craig Lev for his interview on Snap, Crackle, and Pop on Friday. And before we heard Zoloft by Ween, we heard something that was played on that show, Bird and Bee, which is sort of the latest hit here at KWVA. Bird and Bee covers the songs of Hall & Oates. You might remember I went on a Hall & Oates jag about 6 months ago. Well, here's a band that covered it all. And the woman who is very, very obviously pregnant appeared on the Ellen DeGeneres Show singing that particular song, I Can't Go For That. We started off with two by the Moyer Sisters, who will be here at 11 o'clock by Trans-Pacific Phone Call next week. Let's hope things go well, things work out. We're winding down the Sunday Morning Hangover. Yes, a very mellow hangover, because we did start off with the Twin Peaks tribute. Had Haley Loren in the middle and some Twin Peaks at the end. I don't have a lot of material that I brought with me this week. I do have a couple of things, though, including a song I sort of fell in love with all over again. It was originally done by Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush. It was called Don't Give Up. What I have here is the Willie Nelson, Sinead O'Connor version of the Peter Gabriel song, Don't Give Up. And it just kills me, and I want to play it. And it means a lot to me in some of the extracurricular activities I'm involved with. So, Reverend Mark Times, Sunday Morning Hangover, KWVA Eugene.
In this proud land we grew up strong. We were wanted all along. I was taught to fight, taught to win. I never thought I could fail. No fight left, or so it seems. I am a man whose dreams have all deserted. I've changed my face, I've changed my name, but no one wants you when you lose.
Don't give up, 'cause you have friends. Don't give up, you're not beaten yet.
Though I saw it all around, I never thought that I could be affected. I thought that we would be the last to go. It is so strange the way things turn. Drove the night toward my home, the place that I was born, on the lakeside. And as daylight broke, I saw the earth. The trees had burned down to the ground.
Don't give up. You still have us. Don't give up. We don't need.
Go! Hard to settle down. For every job, so many men, so many men, no one needs.
Don't give up, 'cause you have friends. Not the only one. Don't give up. No reason to be ashamed. Don't give up.
that about does it for the Sunday Morning Hangover. I'm your host, Reverend Mark Time. We've heard Royksop, De Ashuaya. Before that, we heard Don't Give Up by Willie Nelson and Sinead O'Connor. Don't forget, next week at 11 o'clock on Sunday, the Moyers interview, Trans-Pacific interview. And you can get my archive shows at SundayMorningHangover.com. You can find me at RevMarkTime@gmail.com. It was a great show today.